Today, we throw the spotlight on a native Hawaiian snail that was previously thought to be extinct. It turns out that the family of mollusks didn't even have a name, but scientists at the Bishop Museum worked to fix that, naming the snail for someone who has long studied them. We talked to Noreen Young, the mollusk curator at the Bishop Museum, as well as Kenneth Hayes, head of the Pacific Center for Mollusk Biodiversity, which stores genetic materials for snail specimens found all across the Pacific.
We recently gave the name, describing a new species of Hawaiian land snail, and it's new in the sense that it's just gotten a name. It's been known for nearly 100 years. It was first discovered by Bishop Museum researchers in around 1924 or so on the island of Nihoa. And this is a snail that's endemic to the island of Nihoa, and it had never been formally described and given a name in a scientific publication. So it's sort of gone unnamed for 96 years. So we recently put together the information needed to give that a name.
So what does the snail look like?
It's about the size of, a little smaller than, say, a dime in diameter. It's a very flat coiling thing. It's tannish color as the base, and then it's got tiger stripes, what we like to call flammulations or tiger flaming pattern to it. So it's got like tiger stripes and sort of a reddish brown going around it. It's quite a beautiful little snail.
As far as the whole process of actually naming it, what's involved in that?
To name a snail, particularly in modern times, you really need to make sure that it actually is new to science, that you're not giving something a name that already has a name that someone else has already described. So that involves comparing it against everything else in that family or in that group that's already been named. So you've got to track all that material down. Then you also have to look at its anatomy. So you've got to do some dissections and look at its reproductive anatomy primarily, because that's the feature that's often used in snails to distinguish among species. And in this case, we use a lot of genetic tools as well. So we try to develop DNA sequences that can also be compared to other species so that we know it actually is a distinct species. So all of that is involved. And we also take really good photographs of the shell so that we can characterize it. And in this case, we used a technique called micro-CT, which is almost like an X-ray, except it allows you to just visualize the hard structures and the internal structures of a shell without having to break it open or anything. So it's like a really high-resolution X-ray. And we use that technique as well to characterize the shell morphology.
Noreen, describe how you came across this.
We had these shells that were first collected in the early 1920s by other Bishop Museum researchers. And we also had specimens that were collected in 1980 by then curator Dr. Carl Christensen. And so these specimens were in this collection for quite a while without an actual description or a name. And so I was able to facilitate in helping with all of our colleagues in providing a description and a name for this snail.
And so tell us, and then you folks just started working on this, I guess, right as the shutdown happened.
We had been talking about this for more than a year, actually, but we recognized that this was sort of importance, and it was partly precipitated by the fact that a group of researchers doing seabird counts and seabird conservation and rat eradication were going back to the island, and we saw this as a perfect opportunity to get the kind of fresh material we needed to do genetics for the specimen. And so that's what prompted us, and that trip was made earlier in the year because we had that new material. It was like, okay, well, let's move forward with this. Let's get a name on this so we can begin to develop a conservation plan for it, because we were concerned that with climate change and other factors impacting native species, that we might not get another chance for another 5 or 10 years, and it could be gone by then. So we really started pushing in early March, right as the shutdown hit, to try to push forward with this.
Noreen, can you describe the type of material that they were able to bring back from Nihoa?
Originally, from Dr. Cook and such, they brought back shells as well as shells with the body in it. And also, Dr. Christensen was able to do so also. And so with the recent collections by Dr. Dave Sisko, another co-author and collaborator on this manuscript, he also brought back individuals in which we could compare to those earlier collections to make sure that we could verify that it is the same species and to start putting together all of the historical information about their habitat so that we could have a better assessment of their conservation.
And do we have a sense as to how large the population is on the island? Or I don't know how tricky it was for them to collect what they brought back with them. I mean, was it just like a half a dozen or a dozen of these snails?
Dr. Sisko was able to go through most of the areas throughout Nihoa because it's not actually a very large island. And so he did a lot of visual surveys and counting from different patches of grass throughout the island. And he took back a couple of vouchers from each one just to make sure that they are the same species. So there are probably a couple hundred still around over there that he could able to count and to do some relative abundance searches for these individuals.
We know from about 10 years or more of survey work across the islands that Noreen and I have been involved in that snails are disappearing really fast. So we've found populations of snails that were thought extinct where there'd be, you know, 50 or 100 or as many as 300, and they've disappeared completely within less than 5 years. And it's really difficult to say why or even understand why. It's just a number of factors. And so having a population, while some people might go, wow, hundreds of them there, that doesn't even come close to comparing to what those populations were probably like 200 years ago or even 100 years ago. There were probably tens of thousands of them. And so having a population of 100 snails is, in that sense, it's a really tiny population, very susceptible to extinction, because 100 individuals just isn't very many individuals in a population to maintain it and can disappear very quickly.
And can you describe the island that it's on? You know, what kind of environment is it?
You wouldn't think it was a very hospitable environment for snails. And most people, when they think of snails, they think of either garden snails or lush, wet forest. And this island's pretty dry. I mean, it does get some rain, but there's not a lot of sort of forest canopy on it. It's mostly Aragrasis grass, which is this native grass that's endemic to the Northwest Hawaiian Islands. And it's these bunches of grass. So it looks like almost like a savanna, most of the island, with just lots of grass on it. And amazingly, these snails have sort of hung on in these clumps of grass at the bases of them, where the little moisture is trapped and captured. So they stay there, and they don't move around much. And that was one reason Dr. Sisko, when he went and was able to survey, along with the Fish and Wildlife folks, he surveyed multiple clumps of grass along a transect across the island to see how they were doing across the island and to make sure we were dealing with only one species. Because, again, a lot of times these species are difficult to identify based just on shell morphology. A lot of them look alike based on shells. And so we wanted to make sure we weren't dealing with more than one species.
Are there multiple species of snails on that island?
Not in this family. There's only one that we know of on this island now. But there are some other species of snails. So in like the Akatanelidae, there's some species left there that are in that family.
Okay. And what is the name of this new one that we've identified?
So this new one we named in honor of Carl Christensen, who Dr. Young mentioned earlier, was one of the last museum researchers to see it in the 80s before we came along. And he has spent his life since a teenager. He first started coming to the museum when he was a teenager working with the malacology department in the early 60s. And so he has been dedicated to bringing the plight and understanding of snails in Hawaii to the forefront for his entire life. He spent his whole life doing it. So much so that when he left the museum in the 80s, he went on to Harvard to get a law degree, and he came back to Hawaii and worked as an environmental lawyer for many years, sort of really trying to strengthen laws related to conserving our natural resources and saving things like snails. So we really felt that it was sort of the right move to name it after him. So we named this Endodonta Christensenii, named after Carl Christensen.
Okay, but he's not around, is he?
He is around.
He is?
He is still around. Yep, he's still around, and he's still, like, absence the pandemic shutdown, he still comes into the museum a couple days a week. So we also thought that was sort of befitting, because here we had this species that's sort of the last of its kind still hanging on there. And we tease Carl also and say, you know, he's one of the old malacologists, and he's still coming in and still hanging on despite everything. So it's definitely a befitting name. He mentioned that, you know, he always had a particular fondness for this group of snails anyway. He had a passion for understanding them, and he sort of traveled all over the Pacific and seen them. And so he felt really honored, I think, that this one was named in his honor.
We have been hearing from Kenneth Hayes and Erin Jung, who work at the Bishop Museum. They were talking about the recent efforts to identify one of our native Hawaiian snails. It was threatened with extinction. And congratulations to Carl Christensen, who they've named a snail after.